Coming up on this episode of the podcast Under the Stairs, it is the return of the In Reverence subset of shows. This is episode number 2, and we're looking at a little movie from the 1980s that rocked my fucking world, with a review of Fright Night. But before we get into that, ladies and gentlemen, you already know this, it's year 4, and motherfuckers, you know what that means. This time, it's war. Warning. The podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs.
Had what I thought was a very funny idea of a movie fan, myself, You know, becoming convinced that the next door neighbor was a vampire.
Yeah.
And I've been walking around with that for about a year, but I didn't, that's an idea, that's a premise, that's not a story. The story came when I said, well, the fan, the horror fan, the teenager, what's he gonna do if he believes that the next door neighbor is a vampire? Because everybody's gonna think he's mad. And I thought, well, of course, he goes to Vincent Price. And the minute that I had the Roddy McDowell character, I had the story.
Yeah.
Because I knew that then, you know, he goes to this ham actor, who of course has been making a down on his luck, doesn't believe a word of any of this stuff, you know? And it was funny, it was delightful, and I knew it was a star turn for a character actor.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and I wrote that sucker probably in about 3 weeks.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. I'm your host Duncan McLeish, and welcome to the show. This is In Reverence, our special subset of shows. This is episode 2 of that subset, and we are looking at movies that inspired me to enjoy, love, and declare my undying devotion to the genre. Now, in the previous In Reverence episode, which would have been episode number 1, we looked at a little movie from 1986 from some unknown director called David Lynch, where we looked at Blue Velvet, a movie which really did kind of twist my sensibilities at an impressionable age, to kind of start a love of something a bit more morbid, a bit more macabre. It gave me an insight into kind of noirish cinema, and at the same time into those very Lynchian qualities which have now become part of my very own film review vernacular. And to move into episode number 2, it was important for me to pick another movie which did just as much, but in a completely different sort of genre. Now, the movie we're going to discuss, as you probably guessed from not only the title, the description, and the artwork for the show, is Fright Night from 1985, written and directed by Tom Holland. Now, Fright Night is a hugely important film for me. Point of fact, is one of my favourite movies from the 1980s. I think it's absolutely incredible, and we're going to get into a full kind of discussion and review of that coming up real soon. But it's quite interesting to see how much of my kind of love for the genre, which has really spiralled out from particular movies at particular times. And we got a question on the Facebook group page not that long ago about whether or not this is inherently a nostalgic thing or an age thing. Do I still find movies that change my love of the genre and cinema at the age that I'm at just now? And I do. I constantly feel myself finding movies that change the way I enjoy cinema. I mean, Duncan McLeish 5 years ago didn't watch as much of one particular subgenre as Duncan MacLeish in 2017. My love of the cinema genre that is horror and its kind of wider facets is always changing, it's always evolving, and I think that's the beauty of the cinema that we have afforded to us as horror fans, is that filmmakers will always take those little nubs of things that we grew up watching that influenced them to make movies that pay homage to the cinematic decades that they grew up in, but at the same time they will always put their own spin on them. And there are also directors that just flat come along with fresh ideas that ultimately shape the direction that we go in. And relating that back to Fright Night, the year that I saw this movie, and like I say, we're going to get into more details when we go into the review. When I saw this movie, it would have been kind of late 1980s. I wouldn't have even been 10 years old when I saw this movie, and my knowledge of horror was fairly good at that age. I'd seen a lot of Hammer horror by that point, Universal Monsters, I'd seen a lot of slasher movies, I'd already started my journey into things like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. I'd seen a lot, so it's quite interesting that Fright Night comes along with the take that it does, and its vision, its wholly kind of singular vision to really hug, so to speak, the kind of the past of horror cinema whilst embracing something inherently new. So yeah, can't wait to discuss that movie, and that's coming up real shortly. But let's get into some business, some B-snatch, right at the start of this episode, like we like to do on the podcast Under the Stairs. So thank you very much for everyone that checked out the Invaders from Mars commentary last week, and for those that checked out the very special bonus Baz episode where we looked at Panzer Chocolate, a movie which, I'll be honest with you, I can't see me checking out anytime soon. Baz didn't exactly sell it to me, but I know some people out there have already bought it. I look forward to hearing what you thought of it. Now, at the same time, I would like to acknowledge that we started something brand new, because we like to do that constantly over on the podcast Under the Stairs. We started a little something called Challenge Teapots. Now, that might sound, the title being misleading as it is, that you guys are going to challenge us. That's not going to happen. It's the other way around. We're challenging you, listeners. Once a month, I put a challenge out over a weekend, and we will collate your responses to said challenge and include them on a bonus episode. So that bonus episode will be dropping on Thursday. And the challenge that I put out to you, the listeners, was very, very simple. All I asked you to do was check out over the weekend a horror movie that you had never seen before and do a short written review, or record some audio, or post a video, whatever you could do that I could pick up to put in the bonus episode. And we're going to have a special little segment where we go through them, and hopefully we find some movies that we should check out and some movies that we should avoid. So yeah, looking forward to that one dropping. Like I say, that one will probably come out Thursday or Friday, and it'll cover some titles which we know of, some that we don't know of, and wholly what your experiences were with them, which is the exciting part for me. So yeah, that's Challenge Teapots. There'll be another one next month. So the best way to check them out is to follow the Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/teapotscast. Keep you in the know. That way you also get to take part in our Thirsty Thursdays, which is our special live stream where you guys get to interact directly with myself by putting questions or discussion points, which we will answer on that live segment. They're a ton of fun, and you should interact with us and get involved. Steer the conversation. It's your show too, ladies and gents. It's your show too. For those that follow our Instagram, because there isn't enough ways to check out social media for the podcast Under the Stairs, you'll know that the Baz has now received every single Texas Chainsaw Massacre title. Which means, ladies and gents, we will be undertaking an odyssey into TCM very, very soon. It is this year's franchise. You voted on it, you voted for Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We'll be covering them over three shows. Show one will be looking at Texas Chainsaw Massacres 1 and 2, show 2 will look at parts 3 and 4, and the third show will look at Texas Chainsaw Massacre the remake, the beginning, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D. Looking forward to that, it's going to be a ton of fun. Let's see at what point the Baz breaks. I reckon it's going to be kind of early, but we'll wait and see. So yeah, that's I think that's all I wanted to bring up at the start of this episode. Just thanks very much for supporting us. There is another t-shirt campaign out there. We are a couple of t-shirts away from confirmed to print. I think there's about a week left. So if you haven't had the opportunity to take part before, and really wish that you had picked up a t-shirt, the link is in the description for the show. Like I say, it's got about a week left. At which time, if we haven't passed that magical 10 mark, they will not go to print. So let's make sure that happens. I think we're just a couple short, ladies and gents. So if you haven't got one, you want to help out the show, swing some money in. Click on that link and get yourself a Podcast Under the Stairs t-shirt. Benefits the show. And at the same time, you get something cool to wear. So it's a win-win in my book. Right, we're going to take our break here for our feature review of the show. We're discussing Fright Night from 1985. It's the second movie I picked as part of my In Reverence season of shows. That's right, so you're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear the trailer for Fright Night from 1985. And when I return, I'm discussing that movie. I'm doing it right after this.
Bad movies. The world is full of them. From low-budget crap fests to downright unwatchable. And only two men are willing to watch them all. So climb in and take your seat. This is Short Bus Cinema.
Let's do it.
Hey everyone, this is Johnny Krug from Kruger Nation.
And this is Rick Morgan from the Helming Power Hour.
And we have decided to team up and take you where no one has gone before.
We're on a quest to find the world's worst movie, and we're doing it on the bus.
Driving through cult classics in every genre to find the holy grail of bad movies.
So if you're looking for something different and more fun than you can stand, then climb on in.
Short Bus Cinema is a proud member of Legion Podcasts.
That's right, yo!
Short Bus Cinema. We love to watch the movies you hate.
What would you do if you accidentally discovered the house next door was occupied by something not human? Something horrifying. Something unspeakably evil. No one believes you.
Mom, I didn't have a nightmare.
Not your mom.
They did kill a girl over there.
Not your girlfriend.
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back?
Not even the police.
Look, I know it's crazy. I know that, but look, Lieutenant!
It knows that you know. You'll do anything to protect yourself. But it will do anything to protect its secret. Scared. This could be the night of your life.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for our movie review as part of In Reverence. This is episode number 2 and we are looking at Fright Night from 1985. Now, like I said in the intro, I think I came across Fright Night, must have been late 80s, and the video store, the VHS store of the time, where you got your rentals. That's right, kids, I'm that old. I remember the cover for this one so clearly. Very, very, very disturbing. Kind of had, funnily enough, just a couple of years later, and when I say a couple of years later, I mean like about 7 or 8, People Under the Stairs would use a very similar sort of artwork, and by then things like Poltergeist had done something similar as well. It's this idea of the house and something sinister either in or outside the house in the background. Case of this one, it's a kind of plume of smoke or cloud above it, with this very feral, vivid sort of vampiric demon face made in the clouds. And I remember I must have watched this movie two or three times in the one rental, you know, like back to back. I thought this movie was absolutely fucking bitching. It was, to me, the epitome of all that was cool about the 1980s. I found so much love in the 1980s for kind of classic horror movies. And I mean, there was a kind of new wave of horror cinema out there, and there was a ton of kind of the what we now class as the masters of horror doing their own thing. I mean, if you look at Wes Craven pretty much forged his path through kind of grindhouse exploitation cinema through into something wholly more sort of cerebral. By the time we jumped into the 80s, he'd obviously set a benchmark with Nightmare on Elm Street, but when you look at things like Shocker or even Separate in the Rainbow, he was really experimenting with things. You look at John Carpenter was doing all weird and wonderful manner of different movies covering things from kind of science fiction horror right through to kind of classic horror, really kind of putting the world on its head with a kind of nihilistic tone and a series of anti-heroes. If you look at people like Stuart Gordon, who was kind of carrying the Lovecraft flag right through the 1980s with his work on Reanimator, From Beyond, etc. I mean, there was a clear push for certain directors, even looking at Romero's output in the 1980s. Things were kind of shaping into what we now have are these individual pockets of influences which filmmakers now look back to. There's no accident that the filmmakers that are cutting around just now are paying homage to people like John Carpenter. You only have to watch The Void from this year to see how much Carpenter love is in there. But at the time, in the kind of 80s, you would think that you were so far removed that you wouldn't be getting much love for kind of Universal or Hammer horror by then, because you would think on some level kind of late 60s, early 70s stuff would be the influence. And for some reason, Fright Night really, really did take its nods from kind of classic horror, but infuse it with this garish kind of 1980s vibe, from everything from the score to the style. And kind of updated things. There is a kind of weird rear window sort of Hitchcock vibe to this movie as well, which is pretty cool about that, you know, the neighbour thinking he sees something across the road. And Fright Night definitely ticked a lot of boxes for me as a kid. The practical effects are fucking mind-blowing, and what struck me about checking out the recent Blu-ray release, which was put out by, I believe it's Eureka in the UK. I think it was Twilight Time put it out in the States. But if you look at the print, which is fucking gorgeous, the thing that kind of blows me away is how good those practical effects hold up. I mean, incredible. And even some of the CGI, early CGI digital effects, hold up really well in the print. And it's that sort of attention to detail in the craft where you could have whole teams of people working on practical effects that really benefit a movie, and you know, in its age through time, these things stand up because you've got people that are very proud of their craft. And it really kind of floored me at how good that was, and how at times some of the visuals are still quite terrifying to me. That kind of image of the of kind of Brewster trying to turn his love of his life round in the basement and seeing this array of teeth in her face, which is no, you know, there's no accident, happy accident at all, that Robert Rodriguez pretty much steals that image, that visual, that technique, that almost that whole scene from Dusk Till Dawn is in there. If you go back and check it, he pretty much copies it beat for beat, and I think that works wonderful. I think it's really, really, really clever. But there's just so much to love about this movie. It evokes a time period where I was really kind of forging my love of horror. It was something I was interested in, and there were some movies that I could, you know, quote and speak about ad nauseum. But Fright Night was one of those ones which was just, it was scary. It was over the top, it was loud, so many memorable scenes, but first and foremost, it was just fucking fun. Such a fun movie. And I think that's why it stood this, you know, the test of time. Tom Holland is a guy who has had a pretty amazing career in the 1980s. He'd, like, a couple of like proper hits against his name. I mean, when you look back at it, there's just so much to love with Tom Holland. As a writer, first and foremost, he did quite a lot of really, really cool work. I think his story for things like Class of 1984, Psycho 2, are pretty phenomenal. And then when you look at the fact that this is his directorial debut, this is the first movie that this guy does. I mean, he'd had involvement with things like Tales from the Crypt, etc. Before, but when you look at this being his first proper movie, Fright Night kills it. Across the board is fantastic. I think if you look at something like Child's Play as well, which we spoke about way back on episode 1 of this show, I think Child's Play is another one that really kind of sets the tone when the industry of kind of slasher horror movies is at its kind of dying phase and everything's a little bit too campy. Child's Play, I think, is a vicious little bastard of a movie. Even down to Thinner, which I think is a movie which is grossly overlooked. I think it's a ton of fun as well. I think it's one of those ones where it's a proper kind of cursed story. And if you look at things like Drag Me to Hell, they owe a lot to the work that Tom Holland put in Thinner. And whilst he's not necessarily directing that much now, I think he did a couple of movies. I think he's worked on a couple of movies, since then. And obviously Fright Night's been remade in 2011 by a different director based on the story. And I'll go out and say right at the start here that I have a lot of time for that Fright Night remake. I don't think it's bad at all. I think there's a lot of people harp on about certain aspects that were changed for the movie, but I think Colin Farrell is brilliant as the vampire. I think he kind of has that kind of roguish attractiveness which the original captured really, really well. I think Anton Yelchin as Brewster is a bit of kind of genius sort of casting there, and Peter Vincent's kind of update to this theatrical, over-the-top David Copperfield-esque magician, and his performance as Peter Vincent, I think, works incredibly well as well. So yeah, I mean, I really like the remake. It's not as good as the original, let's be honest, ladies and gents, but I think it works really well. So Tom Holland, to me, kind of right out of the gate, just nails this movie. And like I say, when you couple it up with really great story, which is clearly influenced by some of the old guard and very much like Hitchcock's Rear Window. When you have that and then you couple into some amazing practical effects, amazing performances, I think the performances are super strong in the movie, and you just bring in that kind of 80s wackiness, that over the topness that you can only get in that decade, you're on to a classic for all time. So what's the movie about? So in this movie, in this interpretation, we have Charlie Brewster, who is a massive lover of horror. He's kind of like a teenage Duncan, but in a different decade, a decade before. But he's got the real nostalgic love for those classic horror movies, those classic vampire movies. He particularly is a fan of a TV show called Fright Night, which is hosted by a quote-unquote former vampire hunter, Peter Vincent, which you've got to think is, you know, the warm soapy hand job to Peter Cushion. Has to fucking be. So yeah, so you've got that. And he's living next door to this inherently large, ornate, creepy house, which has just been purchased by a man known by Jerry Dandridge. And he thinks, straight away, after catching a glimpse of the house one night when they're moving in, he catches a glimpse of what he thinks is a coffin. He thinks that Jerry Dandridge is potentially a serial killer as well as a vampire. Now, Brister has a particular love of his life, which is kind of hit and miss for him, who is actually played by Amanda Bennis, who's kind of most notably known for Married with Children. And this is a good point to plug the fact that our good buddy Alex Edwards over at the Skeleton Crew has a show dedicated to Married with Children. And you can go and check that out through Horrorphilia, and you should go and check that out. I think it might be the only dedicated Married with Children podcast out there. But yeah, that's, you know, that's what she went on to do. But in this one, she is simply known as Amy Peterson, and she is the beau of Charlie Brewster. And she has been kind of standoffish about their next level relationship step, i.e. sex, and kind of finally commits herself, but Charlie's, he's too engaged, too engrossed in what's happening next door. He needs to find out what's happening. And Jerry Dandridge, played by Chris Sarandon, who's fucking phenomenally cast in this movie, is just this kind of debonair, suave, totally not 1980s character, the way he dresses, but he has that very 1980s look about him, kind of heartthrob look that was so popular in the first half of the 80s. Now, Jerry's not living in the house himself. He has Billy Cole, who is looking after him. The Billy Cole, played by Jonathan Stark, is once again phenomenal, which you're going to hear a lot in this review. I think the casting is perfect. Billy Cole is this intimidating, large, very funny, very quirky version of like a Renfield in this story, except he's all muscle, and he vehemently defends his master. So we very quickly have Charlie thinking he sees someone attacked by his next door neighbour, gets the police involved. The police find absolutely fuck all. And, you know, the police are like, "You're a crazy kid, you know, what do you know?" But Charlie's having none of it and kind of starts to put this idea that maybe there's something going on next door. His best friend, Evil Ed, who is, once again, phenomenal in this movie, played by Stephen Jeffries, I think it is, who, you know, is constantly ragging on the fact that, you know, Chris isn't the coolest kid in the world, he ain't no Casanova, and every time he tries to do something, it kind of spectacularly backfires on him. But we have this situation where very, very quickly Jerry knows that Charlie is onto him, and this kid's not going to let things go. He's very much going to be this pain in the neck that he doesn't want. He wants to just be left alone. He's had to move quite a lot. You imagine it when things get suspicious in one area, and moves to the next area. So we have Jerry comes by the house and gets invited in by Charlie's mum, which now means that he can enter the house whenever he wants. There's no issue with that once you've been invited. That's what they say in vampire lore. You can come and go as you please. And there's an altercation where Jerry basically finds his way into the house and makes a play to intimidate Charlie. And Charlie's having none of it. He brandishes this sort of crucifix at Jerry. And Jerry's obviously, there's an effect there, but it's when he stabs him with a pencil in his hand that this really, really fucks off Jerry, who, you know, maybe overreacts by destroying Charlie's car, and threatens, you know, that he's going to come back the following night and he's going to take Charlie out. There's going to be no mercy. He's going to wipe him out completely. So Charlie panicking turns to the only person he can think will help him, which is Peter Vincent, the, as we mentioned earlier on, the host of this show. It's played by Roddy McDowall, who almost steals this entire fucking movie for me. I think his performance is pretty amazing as this kind of Peter Cushing sort of esque fellow, this hack that works at a TV station doing a kind of almost Elvira-esque sort of Crypt Keeper performance. Very campy, very over the top, very kind of Hammer horror-esque introduction to the movies that you're about to see. Welcome to Fright Night. It's pretty glorious to watch. And you know, Charlie asks Peter for help. Peter's having none of it. He's just been let go from his job because the kids don't want to watch the old horror anymore. They want to watch the new horror. So Charlie freaks out, converts his room into essentially a one-stop shop for vampire hunting. And Evil Ed and Amy are starting to think that maybe Charlie's kind of lost it. So they, in fact, go and hire Peter to prove that he is not a vampire. So we get this scenario where they phone up Jerry, and Jerry says, oh no, you can't bring crosses into my house, you know, working on this kind of this new level of kind of post Christian lifestyle where I can't have crosses in my house. So they show up as a gang to prove that he is not a vampire. To do this, Peter brings holy water with him, which, you know, it turns out it's only tap water, but he's going to try and prove that Charlie's overreacting. And Jerry claims at the time, you know, he's definitely not a vampire. He drinks the holy water. It's not holy water. There's no issue. Everything's looking great. Charlie's clearly crazy, although he doesn't believe he is. And as they're heading out the door, Peter Vincent checks his pocket mirror, which he carries with him, and as he's checking it, he realises that Jerry casts no reflection, and this makes him drop the mirror, which smashes, and then very quickly makes a beeline exit. At this point, it's safe to say that Jerry kind of thinks that maybe everyone is onto him now, and in turn hunts down and converts Evil Ed. So he turns him into a vampire, and Evil Ed then decides to escalate things by going after Vincent, who, you know, is maybe a fake, maybe a phony, but at the same time knows his vampirism shit, and gets his crucifix out and places it against Ed's head, which beautifully imprints this burned sort of scar cross in his forehead, which I fucking love. Like I said earlier, the practical effects in this movie are absolute bitching. The makeup is phenomenal. Ed with that crucifix in his forehead is just one of these pure joys of twisted 1980s, you know, magical practical effects, just done on a level which you just don't see anymore. You just don't see the commitment to the cause. It's fucking brilliant. Jerry, at the meantime, is chasing after Charlie and Amy, who are trying to find any place they can go with a lot of people that they can hold out so until the morning. They go to this nightclub, and Jerry comes in and essentially accosts Amy, who we find out bears a likeness to his long lost love, which once again is heralding back to the very kind of early Dracula movies, the kind of Dracula folklore. So Jerry's got her, he takes him away, and Charlie has nowhere that he can go to except try and get Peter Vincent to help him once again. Vincent agrees reluctantly, assuming that they're all vampires, but he agrees that his role of the vampire killer will... the two of them will sort things out. And then we're really into kind of the last half an hour of this movie, which is bitching. So the two arrive in, and very quickly they find that, you know, Charlie's faith and his crucifix grants a crucifix power, and because basically because Peter Vincent is struggling with that, it has no effect on Jerry. We're now in this position where Amy's been converted into a vampire, and Charlie gets attacked, flung over a banister, and then we have Peter Vincent running next door to get Charlie's mum, and it's not Charlie's mum, and a horrible fake kind of Raggedy Ann red wig. We have Evil Ed, who transforms into a wolf, and whilst running at Peter Vincent to kill him, Peter Vincent stabs the wolf in the chest, in the heart, which converts Evil Ed back into a mortal, and ultimately kills him. I will just say once again, effects in this scene are phenomenal. The transformation from wolf back into man is up there, in my opinion. It's one of these practical kind of, it's not a full-on werewolf effect, but it pretty much is when you're converting from a werewolf back to a human. One of the best ones that no one ever talks about. Everyone talks about, you know, the American Werewolf in London or Silver Bullet in terms of the effects that you get with the transformation. Fright Night for me does it equally well, and in some respects a lot better, and we get to see the final fate of Evil Ed, who dies on the floor converted back to his mortal form. So we jump back. Vincent is now heading back to help Charlie, who has been taken into the same room as Amy and is now seeing her slowly transformed, the intention being that Amy will feed on Charlie when she's fully transformed. Vincent arrives, breaks down the door and says that he believes the process can be reversed, but they need to destroy the Master, aka Jerry, before dawn. So the two of them go to take out Jerry, but they have to get through Billy. Now, Billy isn't a vampire. At least I don't think he's a vampire, because, you know, they saw his reflection in the mirror and they shoot Billy in the forehead, but Jerry manages, using some sort of vampiric power, manages to bring him back. Billy comes back towards him and is shot several times. Doesn't seem to want to die. He's almost like a zombie, which, once again, werewolves, vampires, zombies. Oh my god, this movie has it all. Ultimately, he's stabbed in the heart, and this causes him to kind of melt into these green puddles of steaming goo, and this dust that starts to appear out the bottom of him. Jerry then comes back and he's about to do his, you know, I'm a vampire, look at me, I'm the master, I'm going to kill you all. But there's a little issue. The sun's starting to come up. So Jerry transforms into this bat-like creature, which, once again, practical effects, fucking amazing. But animatronics in here as well. Looks so gnarly. He bites Charlie's arm, then flees off to his coffin, which he can lock from the inside. Charlie and Vincent go down into the basement and they try to get into the coffin. It's obviously locked from the inside. So Peter Vincent starts to crack away at it to break open the seal. But meanwhile, Amy's down there, and Amy, in this scene that I was talking about earlier on, tries to lure Charlie into a false sense of security. And we get this great scene of her kind of looking away and everything's okay and why won't you just love me? And then when she turns around, she has a face full of teeth that's fucking incredible. So they manage to break open the coffin of Jerry, and then Jerry's on the full fucking warpath at this stage. He's just going for full on destruction. But in the struggles, they realise that there's a lot of blacked out windows in the basement. And between Peter Vincent and Charlie Brewster, they both start smashing windows all over the place and ultimately destroy Jerry by sunlight. And this leads to Amy being kind of reverted back into her human form. We then jump forward a little bit into the future. The house is for sale next door, and we have we have Charlie and Amy making out in the bed, because we can have that now. The movie's over. And back on the TV screens, we have Peter Vincent. He's back from his quote-unquote hiatus from Vampires, from hunting vampires on that show. And he's going to maybe change the direction of the show as well. And they present Octoman, which is kind of sci-fi sort of alien horror movie. And just then, Charlie's like has had enough. He's going to switch off the TV. Goes across and he thinks he sees some glowing eyes in the house next door.
You know, he doesn't care. He jumps back in the bed, starts making out with Amy. We see those red eyes again. We find that the Evil Ed is next door, and we get that classic line that's mentioned by Evil Ed so many times throughout this movie. And it's ultimately the... Every movie has those lines that you want to repeat all the time. And this one has this great line, which is, "Oh, you're so cool, Brewster." Which is how the movie finishes. I fucking love this movie. I don't know if you know it. It's about an hour and 44 minutes of absolute fucking awesomeness. This is the epitome, in my eyes, of all that's great about 1980s cinema. I think, like I said earlier on, I think the casting is perfect. Absolutely perfect. I think when you jump to the effects, you've got Richard Edlund, that his team had worked on Ghostbusters. They're obviously, they had to do a lot of work on this one. And the budget was good for this one. It wasn't amazing, but I think they take it to a completely different level. I think the score for this movie is pretty amazing as well. You've got a really eclectic sort of different styles of music that cut through here, all inherently 1980s. And even if you get a chance, you check down the music video for the title song, Fright Night, by Jay Gillis Band, which I think is pretty amazing as well. I just think across the board is just that the casting is works really well. I think the story works incredible. I think the acting is on point for that script. I think everyone really understands what they're doing and has a lot of fun while doing it. I think you couple that with some gnarly effects and some genuine danger and peril in this movie. I mean, for all intents and purposes, we see his best friend die. Evil Ed dies in this movie, even though at the end it's hinted that he may still be alive. That's something you don't see in a lot of movies, especially nowadays. The best friends survive, or they're not likeable best friends, so you don't want them to survive. In the case of this one, it totally works, and yet you have that love for the characters, and as such you want to see them all make out really well. I think Roddy McDowall's performance is the one that really kind of captures everything for me. I think he's brilliant as the kind of Van Helsing of the story. I think that works really, really well. Now, if we're acknowledging the Fright Night franchise, if we can call it that, there was a sequel, Fright Night 2. I have never seen it. It came out in 1988, I believe. Then there was a remake, which I said earlier, I really liked. And then there was a sequel to the remake, which I have never seen. I think that came out maybe one or two years ago. Still to check that one out. I don't know if I'll rush to see that one, to be honest with you, because a lot of the cast are different. I think it goes in a different direction entirely, actually. Whereas I think the original sequel from 88 picks up with a lot of the same characters, I believe. I may be totally wrong with that one. I've never seen it. So yeah, Fright Night to me is a flawless, perfect movie. I don't think there's anything about this movie that hasn't just stood the test of time. This to me is what you want from a kind of 80s horror movie, and it certainly shaped me. I mean, I've already said it, that to me the 80s have some of the greatest vampire movies of all time, whether it's Along the Roads of Near Dark, or you're looking at Fright Night, or if you're looking at something like The Lost Boys. It was a great time to be into vampires, and they were all really trying to do their own thing. You know, whether that was acknowledge the old school of vampire movies whilst trying to carve out a clear direction of where they wanted to go and modernising the stories. I think there's so much in here that works. It's one of those, lands right in the middle of the decade, and after 85, the decade started to take a bit of a tumble. That's not to say there isn't some fantastic movies, there are. 1985 was a really strong year for horror, actually, but they start to kind of dwindle off and get a bit too campy and a bit too cheesy, and a lot of them lose the menace of Fright Night, which is a shame. But yeah, there we go. That was Fright Night, 1985. Now, I know there's a lot of mad love for this movie out here, so I'm not reinventing the wheel or breaking the mould, by saying that you should check this one out. If you've not checked it in a while, please go back and check it out. It's so fucking good. So good. If you've never seen it before, hopefully you checked it out before we spoiled the shit out of it. But I would say check it out anyway. This movie is like chicken soup for the soul. You can watch this one on repeat. I would say that the Eureka Blu-ray release in the UK is pretty phenomenal, and you can pick it up fairly cheap now. I think about £6 for the Blu-ray on places like Amazon, and it's sold in a lot of supermarkets as well, so go and get yourself one. I got the limited edition steelbook, which was a worthy purchase because I think the price of that one's now doubled since it went out of print. So yeah, incredible. The special features, absolutely amazing as well. Highly recommend the Ryan Turek interview with Tom Holland. Ryan Turek now is one of the senior people over at Blumhouse and also does the Shockwaves horror podcast, but the interview is from a couple of years ago and it's pretty fantastic. Right, I'm going to take a break. It's the final break of the show. When I come back, I'm closing it out right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been this very special In Reverence, episode number 2 of the Subset Shows, where we looked at Fright Night from 1985. Fucking love this movie. So, hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully you'll go and check it out. Let us know if you do. Like I said at the start of the show, we will be doing a little bonus episode. It won't be a long one at all. Maybe do like a short movie review if I can find the time to watch something that I want to review on the show, and we'll cover some of the output that you guys brought back to us from the challenge teapots, where you watch a movie you've never seen before, horror movie, and then you review it on our page and I read them out or put in your audio on the show. So yeah, a couple of days left to get them in. They need to be in for Wednesday, so make sure you get that done and they will appear on the show. We will be carrying on with the podcast Under the Stairs in earnest. It is worth saying that I will be doing a marathon in the next 2 weeks. It's on a Sunday, and as a result, what I might do, and I'm not saying for 100%, but what I might do is take the week of the marathon. So basically, I run the marathon on the Sunday. I may take that week after off of podcasting to give myself a little break. I think we're doing quite well. We've had a ton of shows out. Maybe put out something bonus wise in the middle of the week, but maybe give myself the Monday to recover. I've been told that after 26 miles of running I will need it. I won't really feel like doing much else except resting, so that's worth putting out there just now to give you a couple of weeks notice. The Baz is obviously going to be undertaking his franchise challenge of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre real fucking soon. So we're looking to start putting out those shows over the next month. We'll kick them off, certainly. 3 episodes for your listening pleasure. Can't wait for them. They're going to be, I imagine, heavy downloads, because you guys can't get enough the sexy, sexy Baz. Right, I think that's all I wanted to say on this very special episode. Keeping this one within an hour, which is the plan, and Reverence shows should always be within an hour. There will be another In Reverence in June. It'll be episode number 3. We'll be looking at something a bit more modern, actually. We'll be casting our eyes forward over a decade from the release of Fright Night. Talk about something a bit more in the realm of modern horror. That is kind of post 2000. So yeah, like I said earlier, always learning, always evolving, always loving the genre. That's what In Reverence is all about. There's a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. If you're checking us out on iTunes, please take a bit of time to subscribe to our feed. And even if you don't want to subscribe to our feed, leave us some feedback. It is the most important thing that you guys can do as listeners out there listening to us through iTunes. It means the world to us. It costs you absolutely nothing except a couple of minutes of your free time if you're leaving us a little comment. If you give us 5 stars, for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes ratings we are pushed for people to check out the show. Check us out on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Smart Radio. Please become part of our fantastic Facebook community, facebook.com/groups/teapotscast, and go and check out The Baz, who's doing a ton of social networking over on Twitter and on Instagram at teapotscast. Right, I'm going to leave you now, ladies and gentlemen. Please, please, please take care of yourselves wherever you are in the world, whatever you're up to, whatever the time zone is. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from under the stairs, and I'm signing off.
Show.